So anyone can complain.
Okay.
Anyone. Members can complain about members. The public can complain about members. Anybody can complain.
Faites l'appel, s'il vous plaît, Madame Le Greffier.
Hi, I'm Emily Thomas from the States Gref. In case you're a first-time listener to the States Assembly podcast, the States Gref is the department that provides politically impartial support and advice to states members and government departments on the business and procedures of the states. We're not here to take the role of journalists and report on what's going on. This podcast focuses on sharing our enthusiasm, knowledge and expertise without any sort of political influence. In this episode, we hear from Dr. Melissa McCulloch, the Pan Island Commissioner for Standards, about the work that she does on potential complaints from states members and from members of the public. We recorded this in response to a question we were asked on social media about how islanders can make formal complaints. If there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to answer, please get in touch over the States Assembly social channels or email statesgref@gov.je. For now, let's begin with Dr. Melissa McCulloch talking about her background and how she came to be the Pan Island Commissioner for Standards.
Les États sont constitués.
Well, it's an interesting background. I mean, I started out as a scientist and I did my PhD in the School of Medicine in Belfast at Queen's, and then decided in taking up law. I was interested in law. How do you go from that? I don't know, but possibly because my interest kind of peaked at that point, and which then led me into a career in academics as an academic in medical law and ethics and professionalism in the medical school at Queen's University in Belfast. And since then, I got interested in standards general, and it's my background is in applied ethics. So how do we apply the principles of ethics to what we do, which lends itself quite nicely to this role. And so that's really my interest in this role was, you know, outside of medicine, where else can you apply ethics? And this is a perfect role for that.
Mm. Okay. And the role itself then, could you tell us a bit about what the Commissioner for Standards role entails?
So, well, it entails sort of having an ability to look at complaints, assess them, see if there is a prima facie case that the breach occurred or could have occurred, and then decide whether to investigate them if they're admissible. But on the other side of it, that's the main part of the job. Mm-hmm. The other part of the job, which is a part that I take quite seriously, is promoting the highest ethical standards in public life. And I guess that's through the investigations that you do, the decisions that you make, and the processes that you use, really.
And is there anything that is kind of outside of your remit then that somebody might, or members of the public typically expect you to do that you don't? Like, what are your boundaries?
There are boundaries. They're listed in the commissioner's statement. You can see the list. And I think the boundaries are to remember that it's about conduct. It's not about political disagreement over policies, unless your conduct became a conduct issue through debating those. But really, unless something falls within the code of conduct, then it's really not in my remit. I mean, there's one area that I know that causes the public great concern, and that would be social media posts. But, you know, it's hard when you get a complaint about something that has been quite offensive to somebody made by a member, and you have to tell them, well, look, they're allowed, they have freedom of expression covers that off, and they have enhanced protection under that article. So those are issues that kind of fall outside the remit, because that is the right to freedom of expression kind of trumps, they're allowed to upset and annoy, and all the case law just dictates that there's a lot. And I value freedom of expression too. So, but on both sides of it, you're sort of thinking, I'm trying to build trust with the public in members. And sometimes, you know, I'll say to members, you know, think before you tweet, you know, because it becomes a vicious circle sometimes. You know, you can't really find them in breach of a code if they have freedom of expression to say things.
Mm. This is the first time that there's been a Pan-Island commissioner. What benefits or opportunities do you think there are in having somebody working in this role across Jersey and Guernsey?
I think economies of scale. I mean, it's good for both places because they're sharing a commissioner. I mean, in terms of the likeness or the, they have different codes, they have different processes. Quite different processes in terms of appeals, things like that. But similar, my process in terms of investigation remain the same. It's just, you know, for instance, in Jersey, my decisions are non-binding on the PPC. Mm-hmm. So they can look at my decision, all the evidence, and decide whether they agree with me or not and make their decision. They are the adjudicators. Whereas in Guernsey, it seems to be happening. They're still debating it, but it looks as if it will be a binding decision I make and it will be appealed to someone other than me, another commissioner, for example, take the appeal of it. So it's a complete, that system I've never worked in. But of course, Guernsey has a different history of complaints handling, which is they had a conduct panel. So there's it's a different whole system that they had been working in. They've never had a commissioner for standards. It's very, you know, so their history of the whole thing requires a different approach. And I'm all about that. I think you can't accept something to be tailored or to not be tailored to each place. So I think that's important that they're comfortable with their own system and it works for them, you know?
Yeah. Now, you hinted at it a little bit already. I'm curious to know a bit more in terms of what responsibility you as commissioner have in building and maintaining public trust in the States Assembly as an institution.
Well, I think that's the main point. I mean, if you look back, the main point of the position is that in any commissioner for standards anywhere, because really what they were created to do was to initially in 2013, there was a decision that they would that Jersey, for example, would create a commissioner for standards. 2017, the legislation was passed. And if you look at the debates at that time, the reasons for it was they did not want the PPC, the members, did not want to be investigating other members. Because, and of course, they're not investigators necessarily, really. And they saw what was happening in other UK jurisdictions and decided this is what we need. We need independence. And they were very clear in that debate, exactly the need for independence. And that is, that independence is what promotes the public trust. You're not making decisions on your mates and what they've done. You know, you are relying on an independent commissioner to investigate in a robust, fair, proportionate way and come out with a decision. Now, in Jersey, it's not binding, which means that that self-regulation piece is still there where a committee of members can say, well, we agree with the commissioner or we don't agree, and here's why. And I think that's vital for Jersey. That's what their system is. It's also, by the way, the same system in most jurisdictions in the UK.
So
I think that system itself, if it is robust, proportionate, fair, transparent, provides the trust that's required so that if the public feel that a member has fallen below the standards that's that are expected, they know that there's a system that can hold them to account. It, without that, I think you'll find people just disengage in politics in general because they won't believe that there's something that they can do. The view would be they can just do anything they want.
And who can complain to you?
So anyone can complain. Anyone. Members can complain about members. The public can complain about members. Anybody can complain. It's how they complain. I think it's important to read the statement, the commissioner's statement. And to that end, there's a new website coming where you'll be able to access the statement, but also a brief outline of how you complain with a process chart so you can see the steps in the process. But anyone can complain as long as the complaint contains the elements that are required, your name, address, et cetera, but also what is the complaint? What part of the code are you alleging has been breached and by who and how? And some evidence as to how that how you believe it's been breached. Now, sometimes evidence is a tweet. Sometimes evidence is what you say you saw. I mean, but my job is to get to the point where I can assess the complaint and decide whether it is admissible or inadmissible. And that will depend on each case. But there are guidelines that I use to decide on admissibility. That is there enough evidence that's provided that show me that if this did occur, that it would have been a breach of the code?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's admissible, that's when it moves to an investigation.
Okay.
And again, parties are kept updated on the fact that it's moved to an investigation. And following, you know, investigative practice, good investigative practice, there's interviews are carried out, documentary evidence, responses are received. I don't tend, as a commissioner, I find it has always been the best way is to interview people and speak to them in person or via Zoom, obviously, as I live in Belfast. So I think one of the things that I would say is that in meeting people and talking to them, investigating in that way is the most robust way I feel can be done in order to not only, you know, we have to remember here, I'm investigating a complaint by the public and it's against a member. And members, their reputation is very important to them. They're politicians. Mm-hmm. So it has to be fair, robust, and proportionate. And each party of that complaint needs to understand that that is so
mm-hmm.
and trust that process, you know?
Yeah. And then once you've made your investigation, then what follows that? What comes next?
Yeah. So there's a point. I mean, this is an interesting part because the member themselves have 3 points in the process for Jersey, 3 points to basically a right of reply. That's their appeal, widely construed appeal process. So the first point is my findings of fact are sent to the member. I send them myself and they can challenge those. If I've got a fact wrong, they have the right to challenge and I have the right to either accept or explain why I won't. And that goes into the report. Once that process is finished, my report's finalized and it's sent to the PPC. Submitted.
And that's the Privileges and Procedures Committee.
The Privileges and Procedures Committee, yes. And they then have in front of them the report with appended evidence and they make a decision of as to whether they agree. But before they make their decision, the second right of reply comes in and that is where they invite the member to either submit a document, a written document, or come before the committee if they want to, you know. And that is another point in the process where they can be heard. And that's all about, you know, sort of an appeal mechanism. Once that occurs and the committee can then make their decision, they send that, they make their decision. And if there is a sanction, it gets debated in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And that's again a third time that they have a reply into this process. I think it's quite a robust process, actually.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to know, from your point of view, what does a good complaint look like? Is there such a thing?
I think I've seen a lot of bad complaints. I've seen good ones. But, you know, many people, they don't complain for a living. They don't do this often. So what happens when I get a complaint in? Sometimes it'll be very clear. It'll say what they think they've breached, who the member is, what they've done, what part of the code it has breached that they believe it's breached. And that's a great complaint. But oftentimes I have to go back and get further information from the complaint. I mean, there's many number of times, you know, depending on what the complaint is, I might have to meet with the complainant to get to that. And if somebody has disability, I might have to help them to write the complaint.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different things that go on just to get the complaint to a point where it's a complaint that I can consider. And that isn't even, that's me not having considered whether it's inadmissible or not yet.
Yeah,
so there's background work sometimes.
Sure. And there are some sort of itemized, documented criteria that it says what won't work as a complaint, right? So you've got, if someone tries to make a complaint anonymously,
you can't have that.
It's not acceptable. If it's frivolous, vexatious, or unsubstantiated, it's not acceptable.
That's right.
How do you go about determining that?
So I have a big problem determining that because, and I don't often say something is vexatious or frivolous if I can't really say that. And to really say that is difficult. You might have some, where this is usually occurs where you may have, say, somebody who is repeatedly complaining. That turns into maybe a vexatious type of complainant.
Okay.
But on the whole, I very much believe that if somebody went to the bother of putting in a complaint, it's my job to actually try to figure out what is going on in the complaint. And if I am not 100% sure if it's frivolous or if it's even a complaint that I can consider, I usually contact the person who who complained and tried to get a better understanding of that. I mean, this whole, remember, I mean, it's my view that the Commissioner for Standards also has to build trust with the public, because they are trusting me to do the job. So it's no good to just, it's never an option to just go, oh, that's inadmissible, or throw that out. I'm not saying spend time on it if time doesn't need spent, but you must prioritize respect for the public who have actually put in a complaint. Now, they may not like the answer when it's inadmissible, but they must know that it's been considered. That's my view.
Yeah, yeah. And so I suppose two sort of tools that you have at your fingertips to be able to consider complaints. We have two codes of conduct, don't we? So there's the code of conduct for members and there's the code of conduct for ministers. How do you use those?
Well, for every complaint that comes in, I actually assess it against the code, that it's the actual part of the code or the provision within the code that is being alleged has been breached. So, yeah, I use the codes regularly as my tools. They're my toolkit, if you like. But the other thing is, I mean, on a more sort of overview scale, I feel that, you know, all codes are different, but you have a very strong code here.
To our credit.
To your credit. I, you know, I'm fighting for this type of code in Northern Ireland. And it's not that they don't have a strong code. It's that the Assembly's been down and they're trying to introduce part of what I think makes your code very strong. Jersey code. Jersey code's strong. If you look at paragraph 3 and paragraph 5, paragraph 3 and paragraph 5 tell me that you value the seven principles of public life so much that you put them in a paragraph so that they're part of, if you breach that, you've breached the code. Not everybody has that. But also paragraph 5, the second part of it, talks about respect and courtesy between members, the public and members, etc. I think a commissioner has to be aware of thresholds in that, you know, because, you know, you don't want to be disproportionate about applying that. However, we all kind of have a good idea when someone has been disrespected or treated discourteously, and, you know, this understanding of what that is, and what that provision allowed me to do in my statement is to include unacceptable behaviors of harassment, bullying, sexual harassment in that, in Rule 5, which we had to create in Northern Ireland, which hasn't been because the Assembly's down, we have issues there, but we will be putting something to that effect into our code there. So the Jersey code, I think, is very strong. Equally, the Guernsey code, in my view. I think both of them, if I'm being 100% honest, they need a review. They haven't been reviewed in years. There needs updates. That's normal. Every mandate, normally the committee who's in charge of the code, they undertake a review of the code. And that's to reflect changes in various things. Now, there's already work underway that I've expressed to the PPC, things that need updated. And they are definitely going to be looking at this. So aside from all of that, though, I can say I'm quite happy with the code. You know, there are problems with a code, in my view, when the code makes a commissioner feel like their hands are tied behind their back. That cannot be. And that's not how I feel with the code here. The public should be very happy with their code, even though it needs updated. I mean, that'll happen. But because it allows me to say, I think this behavior is beyond the threshold that is acceptable. And basically, the committee then in Jersey, PPC, will look at that. And they then are the adjudicators and they decide, do they agree that this behavior is unacceptable? I'm using unacceptable behavior because it's the most subjective part that I deal with as a commissioner, you know, and that's sometimes the harder bit. You would imagine that a commissioner probably holds a high threshold. They want people to behave in a way that will increase the public's trust in them. So, but it might be that a committee looks at that and says, well, you know, that's standard practice here and we don't think it's a breach of the code. It doesn't normally happen, but, you know, the possibilities there. So it leaves self-regulation intact. And so that's good.
And is there anything in the future for the Commissioner for Standards role that you see sort of evolving or changing? You just mentioned about potential for updating those rules. Is that it, or is there anything else that we can see developing?
There's a few different things that, as I mentioned, the time frame. I think I've mentioned that already. There's a time frame built into the legislation that we're looking to change so that it's 6 months possibly 12, depending. But I think 6 months is the general consensus in other jurisdictions that you can't, you know, there's a little bit of leeway in that you might not have been able to make the complaint prior to 6 months. But in general, that the rule would be that complaints beyond 6 months ago would not be admissible.
Yeah.
So that's something that I would like to look into and make sure that legally I'm not bound by pre-2016. You know, that's a long time to allow complaints from 2016 to present day. So that's one of them. Another change might be. It's been a suggestion. I'm always willing to look at the processes of the commissioner, although I have to update them regularly. And when I listen and I hear things, and one of the members had mentioned about possibly offering mediation when there is not mediation by me, I hasten to add, but mediation to members who complain about other members. So when there's a member complaining about a member, the first stop would be, okay, I've received a complaint. Have you been offered mediation? And if you have, or do you want, you know, double checking, are you sure you don't want to do this for mediation? Sometimes that can be very important because they may not have been offered it yet. And, you know, this I think might help members. So anything that can help a member, you know, politics is a difficult, brutal game. I mean, I feel it is very difficult sometimes. And I, as a commissioner, I really would prefer people to be able to iron out their problems. But sometimes that's just not possible. Sometimes people feel their only option is to go to the commissioner. And you know what? That's okay, too. I think we have to be okay with either way. But I think that extra step might just assist, perhaps. I mean, it's worth a try, right?
And on top of everything else that we've talked about, do you have any advice for anyone who may need to make a complaint in the future that we've not already covered?
Yes, I do. I have advice. If ever in doubt, you know, email me if you need, you know, advice before even deciding. I can't provide. You know, a lot of times what happens is people will want to know prior to submitting the complaint, they'll want to know, is this going to fly? Will this be admissible? I cannot do that. That would be against the process. So I can't be, prejudge a complaint. But if you are having, if you need assistance, if you don't understand the process and you want, my door is always open. But also, I think the website will be a wonderful sort of resource for people so that they see, you know, they say a complaint system is no good if you don't even know how to complain and there's no information out there. Well, this is answering that. The new website will be answering those questions so that you can see. And hopefully over time it might even become, you know, there'll be maybe more information added, et cetera. But as a sort of library of the statement will be there. You can see what's, you know, how the process is run. And I think that's really important so people understand it. I hope it's in an easy to understand language. I've tried my best, but we'll see. And I think other than that, to understand, I suppose one of the things is to understand that it is a serious thing to put a complaint in. It's nothing that is, you should just do slapdash. It is serious. Consider it. Understand that you're complaining about another member and that there will be, if it's admissible, there will be an investigation, a report will be published. And so consider all of that. It is a serious thing to submit a complaint and be prepared that that's the way it will, could pan out.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you want to read any of the documents mentioned in the interview, check the show notes for this episode in your podcast app where you'll find the links. As the Commissioner mentioned, there is a new website coming. So for now, you can find further information on the States Assembly website. And once the Commissioner's own website is live, we'll add that link to the show notes. Thanks for listening to the States Assembly podcast. We'd love to do more episodes in response to your questions, so get in touch on social media or by emailing us at statesgref@gov.je. And if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe. We'll be back soon with more insights on how Jersey's political system works and how to make it work for you.
Very well. in which case the business of the Assembly is concluded, and the Assembly stands adjourned